Parashat Pinehas.
876.
Good morning, Yosef. 876 and the stone from Mashim. Our parasha, Parashat Pinehas, talks about the, actually it's the aftermath of the zealotry of Pinehas that was talked about in last week's parasha. Towards the end of last week's parasha, we read about a flagrant transgression that was made by one of the tribal leaders, a fellow by the name of Zimri, who was the tribal leader of Shimon, went out in the public in front of everybody and took a goya. She wasn't just any goya, she was a princess herself, a lady by the name of Kozbi Batsur. And if you can imagine it, he went in the public and he committed an avon with her. He cohabitated with Kozbi Batsur in public. As a result of that, Pinehas saw this happening in front of his eyes. So it says, Ra'ama aseh v'nizkar halakha. He saw an act in front of him and he was reminded by halakha. The halakha says that kol ha-bo'el aramit kana'im pogaim bo. That anybody that cohabitates with a goya is subject to zealotry, meaning as if you're a zealot, you're able to take the law into your hands and kill the guy. Which means there is no official bet din on such a case. There is no punishment, so to speak, of stoning or any other types of the punishments of bet din. Yeah, this law, you need witnesses. You need witnesses. In this case, there was thousands of witnesses. But Pinehas, being the zealot that he was, did the act. Now, I want to point out that you should not mistake Pinehas as some type of extremist or lahadil asbashalom jihadist that comes along and sees something and all of a sudden, wields his sword out and starts swinging and things like that. Asbashalom Pinehas is not to be looked at through the eyes of condemnation. Our Torah goes out of its way in a parasha called Parashat Pinehas to give Pinehas all the honors and all the congratulations for doing such an important act. But I saw a chidush from one of the rabbis that he asks, the act of zealotry was done in last week's parasha. The reward, however, for Pinehas is not mentioned until a week later in this week's parasha. God rewarded Pinehas. He actually upgraded him to become a Kohen. Pinehas before this did not have the status of a Kohen. Let me explain that to you. Aharon was given the Kehuna. He was given to the Kehuna with him and his children. He had four children at the time. Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, Itamar. The Kehuna went to his children and all their descendants that were not yet born yet. This is what I'm explaining it to you. Any descendant of Aaron that was not yet born qualified to become a Kohen. However, any descendant of Aaron that was alive at the time did not become a Kohen. Hence, Pinehas was the son of Elazar. He was the grandson of Aaron. He was alive at the time. Hence, the Kehuna did not rest on him.
So what was it? Just the
four? Just the four. Five people.
And their kids that weren't born.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. Which is Aaron, his four children, and the subsequent descendants. Pinehas was alive at the time. So he's technically boxed out. Now, in this week's parasha, God tells Pinehas, you're going to get the Kehuna. You and your descendants, which is, so to speak, the Kehuna was now extended to the family of Aaron in a larger sense. But Pinehas, which originally wasn't included, now becomes included. Incidentally, I did hear an explanation to that. One explanation I heard was Why did God limit the Kehunat to Aaron's family? Give it to everybody. It seems when God's limiting the Kehunat, it's because there must have been, Chas v'Shalom, some sort of flaw in the family, that because of that, the Kehunat was not able to permeate through everybody. I heard from one of the rabbis, what was the flaw? It was when Aaron reacted to the Jewish people at the Egel. When the Jewish people came to worship the Egel, Aaron was now confronted with Avodah Zarah. But Aaron sought a peaceful resolution to the problem. Aaron started to negotiate with the terrorists. Aaron started to tell them, listen, bring your gold, come back, we'll see. In the interim, through his negotiations, trying for a peaceful resolution, ended up turning into disaster of disasters. And Avon, that till today, we're still suffering from it. The Torah tells us that every calamity that happens in the world has a little piece of the Avon of the Egel. Aharon's reaction was held in contempt in the eyes of God. As a matter of fact, he gets punished for his role in the Egel. And one of the punishments were that the family of Aaron will not enjoy full Kehuna. The Kehuna is only going to go to the limited members. When was that changed? When the sin of Aaron was corrected. When was it corrected? Or how can it be corrected when somebody is confronted with a travesty and somebody is confronted with something bad and does not stop negotiating and seek a peaceful resolution, and one does what he has to do and makes a tough decision to stand up for what's right and to do what's principally correct, and therefore when Pinehas saw Zimri committing the act, he didn't go to him and say, listen, Dachilak, Rochi, Zimri, Mabisir, Asur, think about what you're doing. He didn't start discussing with him or negotiating with him. On the contrary, Pinehas' Kanaut was the tikkun to Aaron, which means to the inaction and the passivity of Aaron HaKohen at the time of crisis, that was fixed by the zealotry of Pinehas. Hence the Torah goes out of its way to tell us, Pinehas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen. See, the Torah sees fit to give us the genealogy of Pinehas, that as if there's a direct connection to what he did into Aharon HaKohen. And therefore God said, now you fix the, so to speak, flaw on the family name. Your act of zealotry now has cleaned up the family's reputation, so to speak, of their role in the Egel. Now the Kehuna is able to manifest itself on the entire family. But that being said, Rabotai, the question may be asked, why does God wait, and I'm saying this pejorically, why does God wait a week later?
What is pejorically?
Pejorically means, I'm saying like a mashal, I'm saying it. I don't mean it literally. I would advise you to bring dictionaries to this class, Rabotai, in order to... No. I don't know what it means either, but that's why I can use it. Actually, most people use fancy words, also don't know what it means. So they use it. It makes them look smart. In any event, why would God wait a week to reward Pinehas? Shouldn't the reward of Pinehas come in last week's parasha? It should say, he killed Zimri, he did the act. And then God should come to him in the next pasuk and say, therefore I'm upgrading you to a Kohen, I'm giving you a peace covenant. The parasha ends, look at the end of the parasha, there's actually three pairs. Pe means end of subject, end of paragraph. They make like a new indentation on the margin, and they start Parashat Pinehas. Parashat Pinehas, we're going to reward you. This is like a postscript. I mean, you forgot last week, this happened last week. Why do you have to wait a week later, a new column, a new paragraph, a new indentation, in order to reward Pinehas? So I saw a very, very important explanation. Not all acts of zeal are necessarily virtuous. It's quite possible that a person may act in zeal, but it's immaturity. He's acting in zeal. He might scream and he might yell and he's waving his hands. That's an act of zeal that we don't know yet if that's positive or not. Some people act, for example, on impulse. Or it's because they have an intolerance for somebody else's opinion. And therefore, before we can analyze if the zeal is worth being rewarded or not, it must be evaluated. And how do you evaluate it? You must wait some time to see the nature of the person. Which means if you take some time and you see this guy's really a hot-headed fellow, the guy's really hot off the handle, the guy flies off the handle every Monday and Thursday, the guy screams at the drop of a hat, the guy doesn't have tolerance for anybody, the guy's he's a loose cannon. Then already you say, alright, that act of zeal really wasn't zealousness. That was immaturity. That was done out of a spur of the moment decision, and therefore you cannot get reward for others. Zeal can only be considered commendable and considered mature behavior if we have time to analyze where it came from. So the Torah specifically, so to speak, no, the Torah is teaching it to us. God does not need a grace period to figure out a person's intent. But the Torah is a book to teach us proper behavior and proper code. And therefore God specifically says, we gotta wait. Let's see who this man is over here. So a week later, after already we're able to see that Pinehas was generally not like this. This was not the default nature of Pinehas. We walked around with a sword in the public domain. Any guy that was speaking Lashon Hara, dagger him in his arm. Any guy that looked the wrong way, he smacked him across his face. On the contrary, Pinehas was generally soft-spoken, grandson of Aharon, decent fellow, normally act, reserved. So that act of zealotry was an exception, must be that it was purely motivated, Neshem Shamayim. So the waiting period gives us a chance for the behavior to be observed so we can determine that the zealousness indeed is worthy of reward. Once he proved himself as mature and considerate, and his sincerity was established, now already you can give him reward. This is in life we see many times as well. People propose certain things, but in the course of time we see that it wasn't idealistically being proposed, but it was done because of immaturity. If you remember, I don't remember this, but we know the history, in the 1960s, where the hippie movement was very strong, which the hippie movement basically was, do anything that's anti-establishment. You know, the establishment is wrong. And therefore, you know, they would dress in a crazy way, go against your parents, go against society, act like you want, freedom of expression, long hair. Whatever the establishment was doing in the 1960s was wrong. You know, 20 years later, a lot of those people that were proposing that today wear, button-down suits with white black polished shoes and carry leather attaché cases with starched shirts, and they work in the line at a regular job. And what happened? It must be that 20 years ago they were immature. This was not coming because they believed in it or because it was, idealism. This was a fad. They were kids, and therefore they were acting in an immature way. After 20 years later, we're able to see that their actions were really not valid at the time. And the same thing with Pinehas. Pinehas's action needs, the zealot's action needs the test of time to see exactly what is his motivation. Hence, the Torah tells us, wait a week before you're able to judge. Our rabbis tell us that after Pinehas did what he did, there was actually a lot of criticism by the people against Pinehas. They questioned his motives. You know, here's a man that comes all of a sudden in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader, takes the sword, starts killing a tribal leader that's a little brash, or that's a little unconventional. So the people started to complain, who does Pinehas think he is? He's going to come now and save the day? and they start to say, on his mother's side, Pinchas' maternal grandfather was Yitro. Yitro, we know, was a goy. He converted. So they said, look at this guy over here. What do you expect? What do you expect from a grandson of a convert? Guy acts, is this Jewish? Is this Jewish to go start taking a sword and killing? So I learned from this episode, Rabotai, a very important musar, a very important lesson. And if you work for the community, if you serve on committee, and you are a public servant, this idea is very comforting to you and very significant. Let's analyze ourselves what Pinchas did. Let's be objective for a moment. Do you understand that there was a plague? 24,000 Jews died at the end of last week's parasha because they were enticed into the immorality of the daughters of Midian. This was one of the greatest plagues in our history of the Midbar. Even the Agan, which was monumental, we lost 3,000 people. This over here, almost 10 times the amount of people died in a plague instantaneously. Which is even when we talk about the students of Rabbi Akiva, which was much later on in history, when we also lost 24,000 Jews. And I'm not saying it makes it any less miserable, but it did happen in the course of 34 days. Here's 24,000 people in one day. It was instantaneous. So and there was no end. Which means in God's plan, if this would have continued, it would have been an unending plague. The Torah says, "Velo chiliti et bnei Yisrael." God says, "This was Pinchas, and I did not destroy bnei Yisrael," implying that if Pinchas didn't get up and do what he did, this was open-ended. This could have caused an almost complete annihilation, which means there was no number on it. It was an open ticket. Who stopped the plague? Pinchas. He went. You think it's comfortable? You think it's easy to do such a thing? Especially you take somebody that's not trained in war and in killing. I always think to myself, you know, in the olden days, the Jewish soldiers had to go, let's say, fight Amalek. As much as you hate Amalek, and as much as, you know, the descendants of Amalek, as decent, sensitive human beings, I think we'd have a hard time even killing an enemy of ours. It's not so simple to muster up that courage to go, even though we would do it, of course, for the mitzvah. So Pinchas rises to the occasion. He fights his inner emotion, and he goes and takes the sword, and he kills. And the moment he kills Zimri, they make an announcement, they both die. Everybody stop dying. The normal reaction of the people should be, Pinchas, you're a national hero. Pinchas, you saved the day. They should make a tribute. They should make a journal for him. They should go now, give him a trophy. They should make, you know, official Pinchas Day once a year. We're going to celebrate Pinchas for what he did. This man is responsible for saving Klal Yisrael from annihilation. And it's obvious. Instead, what do the people do? Who's this guy to do this? Who does he think he is to do it? Which means, yeah, maybe it's a nice thing, but he wasn't the guy. Somebody else should have done it. Pinchas is not the one that's qualified. A classic example that is very difficult to appease the masses. You're going to work for the community. You'll build institutions. You'll be responsible for so much good. You'll accomplish Talmud Torah, Gemilut Chesed. You'll do things that are wonderful, that are undeniable. And then what will the community say?
You stole.
Exactly. Exactly. You stole. You took. Who did he think? Yeah, we're not denying. Yeah, he did a lot of good things. Don't get me wrong. But he's not the one that should do it. He's not the one that should have been behind it. It should have been done by somebody else. This should not dissuade us from being public servants, but this should just tell us that's the nature of the game. Which means it seems that people are so filled with envy and people are so filled with jealousy that they can't see somebody else be on center stage. They can't see somebody else succeed and do something good. So what do they have to do? They have to find out what's wrong with them. No, his grandfather was a convert, but he's going to be the guy. He shouldn't be up there on stage. Somebody else should be up. Leave the guy alone. The guy did good for you. The guy saved your life. The guy saved your children's life. You know what? You don't want to give the guy a tribute at an annual dinner? Fine. But don't throw stones at him. Which means, be tough. You don't have to come now and lash against me. There. Keep quiet. You don't want to give the guy kavod. You don't want to give the guy a trophy. Fine. But you have to go out of your way now and say, he's not the guy, you don't deserve it. It seems, as much as the things change, they stay the same. Which means these principles of human nature and human condition, it can happen in the Midbar, it can happen in America, it's happening here, exactly. It's the same old emotions that keep on repeating themselves. And therefore the Torah is trying to tell us, don't be dissuaded. What do you think? You think Pinchas retired after that? You think Pinchas after this, oh, that's it? You know, they're criticizing me. Let me stop serving the community. On the contrary, Pinchas continued to do his service. Pinchas actually, it says later on, went and killed Bil'am himself. Bil'am, the soothsayer that came to try to curse Bnei Yisrael, Pinchas could have said, you know what? Let the people kill Bil'am. I'm not interested. I work and work and work, and they come along and have claims against me. I'm out. They want to kill Bil'am? Let them do it. Pinchas said, that's people. It takes time for them to recognize something, and therefore he did not let them water him down. He didn't let the people compromise his ability to succeed. Oh, he saw it. You have to be a certain nature called a zealot, a kanai, to do this over here. Moshe Rabbeinu certainly had the zealotry in him to do it. However, Moshe Rabbeinu could not have done this, in my opinion, 100% Lashem Shamayim. Why? To do this act, you must be 130% Lashem Shamayim. Yeah, if you have any ulterior motive, you can't do this act. It's got to be 100, because then, by the way, Morris, this is very scary, because if you're not 100% Lashem Shamayim, it's considered murder. Meaning, if you're 99.9, but you have one percentage point of a dot, you're a murderer. So this act is very dangerous. Don't try this at home. Well, your guy's going to come along now and say, yeah, I'm a zealot, Lashem Shamayim. I'm going to tell you why he couldn't have been Lashem Shamayim. Before Zimri went with the Midianite lady, he went to Moshe Rabbeinu in front of the whole Sibur, and he said, Moshe, Bisir or not Bisir? Is she permissible or not? Moshe Rabbeinu says, what are you talking about? She's Goya. Not Bisir, forbidden. And what does Zimri say? You married a Midiani woman. So for you, it's okay. But for me, Asur. So he zanged Moshe Rabbeinu. He zinged him in front of everybody. Now, obviously the answer is Zim. Moshe Rabbeinu married her before the Torah was given. Before the Torah was given, all bets are off. This is after the Torah was given. So therefore, the claim is a sketch 42 claim. But what? He asked Moshe Rabbeinu, oh, you can marry a Midyani. But when it comes to me, as soon for Moshe Rabbeinu to go kill Pinchas, to kill Zimri, forgive me, now already there might be a tinge, which is as revenge, which is as he's sticking the sword in him, he'll twist it one more time. By the way, that's for the Azdan, by the way. That's for the shambles. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't trust himself to remove himself from that one, the one act. But Pinchas, there's nothing to gain over here. He was an innocent bystander. The Torah then confirms that indeed he was the Shem Shalom. That's the nature of people. Back to that idea. You can save the world. You can save the community. You can do so much for people. But then already, you know that the next thing is going to come is the criticism. The Hatam Sofer said, and it's a very important lesson as well, which is similar to this, he said like this, again, in people that are doing things for people and running the community and volunteers and things like that, he said, the nature of people is, you'll do for them, you'll extend yourself to them. Be careful, because in many situations, those people that you extended and helped, those will be the ones that come against you. Those will be the ones that won't have gratitude, that will be ingrates. This happens in life. Which means either it's because they want to show that they're not beholden to you, or they want to show, I didn't need you. And what's the proof I didn't need you? Look, I'm not going to reciprocate. They don't want to show they were beholden to anybody. So the Hatam Sofer used to say, when there was he was in the congregation, and one of the congregants was giving him a hard time. He was harassing the rabbi, you know, every day, another difficulty. So the Hatam Sofer told somebody else, I don't know what he wants from me, I never did him a favor. This is the nature of it. You'll do for people, and those people will come against you. So one of the rabbis said, listen, those that work for the community, you're going to get rocks thrown at you. That you have to know from the beginning. But you just have to pray to God that there should be small rocks and not big rocks. They'll miss you. But to pray that they're not going to throw the rocks, that's a miracle. They're throwing rocks.
Rabbi, that's a small percentage.
Okay, but you have to know that. Going in, you shouldn't be fooled into thinking, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to get 100% approval. Everyone's going to say, Sadiq. It don't work that way. Pinchas even got criticized by the people. That being said, the Torah tells us in Pasuk Aleph, actually, Yud Aleph, from the beginning of the Parashah, the second Pasuk, Pinchas ben Azam lanot kohen, heshiv et chamati me'al b'nei Israel. He, through his act of zealotry, he avenged my vengeance. Bekanot kenati betocham, when he did his act of zealotry, betocham. What does betocham mean? Literally, betocham means amongst them. Which means, the act of Pinchas was done amongst the people. What is the Torah coming to tell us? Amongst the people? It's enough that his act of zealotry was done in the tent of Zimri. What does it mean, betocham, amongst the people? So I saw a chidush from a rabbi called the Sforno. The Sforno says like this. Where were all the people that were watching Zimri commit this act? Where are all the people? And see, this was done in public. How come nobody stopped Zimri? Now maybe they didn't have the ability to kill him. But how come nobody even says, hey, Rasha, what are you doing? Haram. If you have 1,000 people or 10,000 people all screaming and yelling, maybe the pressure would cause Zimri to stop. You know what happened to the people? The people stood there and watched Zimri, and they saw him do this despicable act, and the Sforno says they didn't protest. They saw a travesty being committed in front of their eyes, and they had apathy. They just stood passively and watched it. Sforno says apathy is almost as bad as the sin itself. If you could watch something that's wrong taking place, and you don't open your mouth, and you don't say anything, and you have the ability to scream, and you just watch it, so you're guilty as well. When you see somebody flagrantly desecrating your heritage, debating against the mitzvot, questioning the veracity of the Torah, or ridiculing the disseminators of Torah, and you just sit and watch and smile. That apathy is as guilty as the sin itself, because you're lending them support. Because your reticence is interpreted as acquiescence, as if you're agreeing to it. And therefore, the Torah is teaching us over here, indifference is in contempt of Torah as well. So how did the Jewish people fix it? Pinchas said the only way to fix this is, I have to do this act in front of all of Israel. Pinchas went betocham, in their midst. And what was the reaction of Bnei Israel when Pinchas went out with a sword? They kept quiet. They let Pinchas do what he had to do. The lack of protest against Pinchas atoned for the lack of protest that he had against Zimri. Exactly. Pinchas had to show God, and they made a mistake, but look, they're not going to stop me. Therefore, the Torah calls out of its way and says, Pinchas Hashivat Hamati Me'abris Bekanot Kirati Betocham. He had to do the act in their midst when they were watching. The inaction atones for inaction. The inaction that they had on Pinchas' part atoned for the inaction that they had for Zimri's part. And that teaches us that, right, but the second one was good. They let somebody do good. That means they were telling, we agree with you. Bechavod. That's an important lesson for us to know that as well. That when we see things that are wrong, whether it's in community, whether it's in family, whether it's in our personal lives, if we have the ability to say something and to change it, through pressure, through the right words, through the right actions, of course, without, I don't think any of us are kana'im. None of us have reached the level of Pinchas, but through the proper channels, we have an obligation not to stand and just listen. The other day, I felt myself guilty of this. I was talking to a rabbi. I was actually listening to a rabbi. The rabbi was talking to me. And in the course of a conversation, he said about another rabbi in the community, not like Mr. So-and-so. So, you know, he went out of his way to give a dig, quill, that I should hear it, you know, Mr. So-and-so. And it happened so fast, and I didn't react. I wasn't maybe, I didn't have the courage at that moment to say, I'm talking to a rabbi, rabbi, I didn't either. And I walked away and I felt guilty. I felt so guilty that I heard somebody say something about it and I didn't rebuke. I didn't say haram, you can't. I felt so good that I wanted to go to the one that we talked about and say, forgive me for not defending you. Forgive me for allowing something in the private conversation. Forgive me for hearing it and not defending you. Because for me to listen to that, that's as if Lata's saying, I'm in. I didn't argue with him. You heard it. I said it. That's what we're talking about over here. Which means, unfortunately, it's probably Avon on my part as well.
But on these things,
can you go back and review?
Of course, you can fix that. I go back to it and say, you know what? The other day you said this. You can fix this.
No, but in these things, it's a judgmental call whether it is a mystery.
Correct. But
this is a mystery. Maybe to you, it's not a mystery.
You're right. I think for us, any person that's considered, you're right. But today, anybody that walks around in our community with the title rabbi, if that's what he's being called, that's the way he's accepted as rabbi, to call him mister is already belittling the person's capability, even if he's not rabbi. But if that's the way he goes as, and that's the way he's accepted, that's the way people refer to him, meaning every community member as well. So for a rabbi to say mister, I have to answer to you, I answer to God.
I did that.
He's asking,
where
did you do it or you didn't?
Rabbi,
what if he was
I'm over here, I answered the Borei Olam, Morris.
The rabbi that you were talking to.
You became on the committee now all of a sudden with the Borei Olam, maybe. Beddin Shalmata, Beddin Shalmala.
What if he was a great rabbi that you were talking to?
Great. It was a great rabbi.
So that's why. That's
doesn't
why,
matter. That's doesn't, why, matter. That's doesn't matter. That's why I reserve. I feel that I was wrong. I was wrong. In a nice way, I could have said, Hakam. Hakam.
No, whatever.
But I think there's another explanation. You fell for it. You bet. They baited you, Mars. They baited you. They baited you. But there's another explanation that I saw. There's another explanation that I saw to explain the word Betocham. The explanation might be as follows. As we learned earlier, the Pinchas to do this, he needed a lot of courage. What motivated Pinchas? What was Pinchas' inspiration to overextend himself the way he did it? Which means people usually act as something catalyzes themselves, something causes them to rise to the occasion. What was the, oh for sure, but as a large factor of it. But everybody saw the 24,000. The truth of the matter is, what motivated Pinchas might have been Zimri. Zimri motivated Pinchas. The Chovot HaLevavot writes, Rabbeinu Bachri, as one of the Rishonim, writes in the Chovot HaLevavot, that there was a certain Baal Teshubah, a man that repented from his ways. And they asked him, what was your inspiration? He said, when I saw other people committing their iniquity, committing their sins with such a passion and such a devotion and such a desire, I said to myself, if they could serve their foolishness and their vanity with such conviction, they get up early in the morning. I was on a train and I was overhearing one of the guys on the train talking to his friend about his schedule in the morning. It seems the guy wakes up at 5 o'clock every morning. Where's the guy wake up 5 o'clock? He's a medicated guy. Where's the guy at 5 in the morning? He doesn't start to... Running, I would say it's okay. Exercise is noble. But he gets up because he's part of a group on the internet that they have poker tournaments. So he says he gets up from 5 to 8 before he goes to work. 3 hours, it's a virtual poker game. You can play internationally. So he's playing with guys from Australia, with guys from all over the world, in Vietnam. And he goes up to his attic. He has his ashtray. He smokes 3 or 4 cigarettes, 3 hours of poker. At 8 o'clock, he showers and goes to work. So I thought to myself, if this guy can get up at 5, guy's getting up to City Hall every day of the year. We get up 5 o'clock 40 days, and you know, he can't imagine it. We dread thinking how many more days to City Hall and when's it going to end. And this guy over here, as a matter of fact, and it didn't seem the guy suffers from insomnia. He just trained himself, you know, for a 5 a.m. Poker game. This is an amazing thing. A guy like this could inspire us if they can get up to their shkuyot, if they can get up and be so committed to their nothingness. So, as in, you only get up 5 o'clock, at least you can get up for minyan. I didn't ask, but the point is, that's what the Baal Teshuva was saying. The Baal Teshuva was saying, in the Chavot of the Ravon, their commitment, their enthusiasm for evil was my inspiration for good. And that's what happened to Pinchas. Pinchas said, if this guy Zimri can go in public and he can go commit this avon, maybe him more. He doesn't care, he's not interested. If he can do that for evil, then I can be the same guy as passionate for the good. So in truth, it's ironic. Zimri was the motivator for Pinchas. And that's why the Pasuk says, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen hashiv et chamati ma'a ben Yosef bekano et kinati, from avenging the vengeance of God. From where? Bitocham, which means from them. which means the sinners were the reason for his vengeance. Betocham, it was from them where Pinhas was able to gain the strength of character. They catalyzed them. They caused them to do what he had to do. Hence, Betocham is saying from the evildoers themselves. They motivated Pinhas. This is very important for our generation as well. And you see, so many people that are committed, like I said, whether it's to their addictions, or whether it's to their bad habits, or whether it's to their, you know, look what a person will do in order to make money. Guy will travel 20 hours on a flight, jet lag himself, eat tuna fish for 2 weeks, live in a hotel room, but what? He needs to make money. So we should be less devoted to God. What is money compared to service of God, doing the Torah and the Mitzvot? Money's a temporary benefit. Torah and Mitzvot are eternal. We shouldn't be any less committed than other people are for the other pleasures of life. Others are able to stay up till the wee hours of the morning, reveling and partying, and have all the strength in the world. And we come home from work and say, I'm too tired to go to a class. We should learn from these guys. These guys are in a club at 2 o'clock in the morning, frolicking around. They have the strength. They don't get up till 10 o'clock the next morning. We have to get up to minyan. No, there's some truth to that. But you understand my point. That it's from them we should learn already what's demanded of us. We'll say one more idea and then we'll conclude. On 884, the Torah tells us the different genealogy of the families of Israel. Actually, there was a census that was held in this week's Perashah. So it goes through each family. Now it discusses in 884, Pasuk 57, the family of Levi. Which obviously is from the important families in Klal Yisrael. So it tells us you had the Gerishon line, you had the Kehati line, you had the Merari line. It tells us the families of Levi, and then it goes and says, Kehat, which is one of the children of Levi, had a son called Amram. Then the Torah gives special billing to the wife of Amram. Beshem Eshet Amram, Yocheved Bat Levi, Asher Yalda Otan Levi B'Misrayim, Vatelet LeAmram Et Aaron Et Moshe Et Miriam Otam. In giving the family tree of Levi, the Torah seems it fit to place Yocheved at the core of the genealogy. I mean, she gets a whole pasuk. She was the wife of Abraham. She had 3 children. What is so special here? And what is the lesson for us telling us we can learn about this great tzaddiket Yocheved? Yocheved, according to the Midrash, lived for at least 250 years. She lived a very long life. She lived from the times of when the Jews went out to Egypt, right? She was born on the way down. And she lived there for the entire duration, 210 years. And in the Midbar, 40 years. So that's at least 250 years she lived. She was able to see what I don't think any mother in history was able to see come out of her children. What type of nahat did Yocheved have? Could you imagine? Her oldest son Aaron, Kohen Gadol. Her youngest son Moshe Rabbeinu. Her daughter Miriam is the prophetess of the ladies. Could you imagine the nahat of a Jewish mother to see not one child succeed to these heights? She saw all her children and she's watching it and she's enjoying it. Where did this come from? Where did this come from? What zechut did Yocheved have in order to have such children like she had? She had to have a zechut. The zechut of Yocheved is told us in the beginning of Parashat Shemot, when Paro made one of his decrees that the Jewish midwives had to kill the children at birth on the birthing stone. Yocheved, who was one of the major midwives, sacrificed her life in defiance to Paro's decree, and she went and she gave nursing to these children. She brought them life, like the pasuk of the Hayena Etayladim. God said, measure for measure. You brought life to the children of Israel. I am going to bless you that your children are going to give life to Israel themselves. You're going to be blessed with the greatest children. You're going to be blessed with the children that are going to be the most special with the highest potential. But I was thinking to myself, what type of life was your chevet bringing these children into when she was saving them in Egypt? To a life of cruelty, a dangerous world, a life that was filled with misery and persecution. And still, God said, bottom line, you were involved in bringing children into the world. That's the biggest zichut you can do. Unfortunately, today, in our society, many young parents involve themselves in abstaining from having children. They're involved in what society calls family planning, where in their mind the ideal home is to have 2.5 children, a dog, a cat, you know, a swimming pool. In Judaism, we don't look at the situation in the present to decide whether we should have children or not. Unfortunately, today, a person says, I can't afford it, there's no space, there's no room, and therefore, or those reasons are considered noble compared to other reasons that people give. I want to live in the city for a few years. I want to, you know, relax. I want to get to know. What do you get to know? You're married now. What do you want to get to know? Nothing's going to change. It's going to be the same thing today. It's in 2 weeks. What do you get to know about her? You know her enough to give her a ring to marry her. So if you don't know her enough, 2 years not going to make a difference anyway. But for selfish reasons, to come along and say, well, she's not old enough to have children. She's old enough to get married. Our great grandparents had children. They were 12 years old. Now to come along and say a child that's 18, 19 years old, she's not ready to have a child. So this, maybe some cases there's truth to that. But to come along and use that, I'm saying, when they're using it as an excuse, when it's really not the real reason, when it's a cover-up and they're masquerading it in order to abstain, look at the mitzvah, what it means to bring children into the world. Because Yocheved brought them, and by the way, she brought them into a world that was a dark world. And still, look at the barakah that came as a result. God blessed her with 3 of the most spectacular children. All the more so, when we involve ourselves in the mitzvah Peru Urvu, which incidentally is greater than any mitzvah in the Torah. You know, besides the 613 mitzvot that we have, there is something to say in the order that they're written in the Torah. There's no coincidence that Peru Urvu is the first mitzvah written in the Torah. That already tells us of its priority. That already tells us of its importance. It's obvious. There's no world. There's no Yahadut. There's no Judaism if there are no Jews. So before you can have Judaism, you need Jews. And Jews are created through the mitzvah of Peru Urvu. And that should be a reminder to all of us that Baruch Hashem, we have children, may they all live and be well. That, as we said many times, that the mitzvah Peru Urvu is not only to bring them into the world. Once we bring them into the world, we have an obligation to direct them and to guide them and to train them. The word urvu in Hebrew has 2 meanings. Urvu means harbeh, multiply, have a lot of children. But urvu also means direct. Yishmael used to have a bow and arrow. The bow and arrow, they used to call Yishmael by hero vekashat. He was a roveh. He was a sharpshooter. Why do they call a man that has a bow and arrow at Oveh? Because he has to aim. The Torah is telling us, Peru, have many children, be fruitful. But Urvu, but you have to direct them as well. It's not enough to have children, that's the easy part. That's the fun part, to have them. But the difficult part is after you have them, then they're ready, Urvu. A person might go up to Shamayim after 120 years of time, you didn't fulfill them as well, Peru, Urvu. What are you talking about? I had 10 children. Yeah, you fulfilled Peru. But urvu you didn't do. Which means exactly, you didn't take your responsibility seriously. I once heard from Rabbi Pinhasi, he said the following derasha. He said, the job of parenting obviously is not easy. The job of fatherhood and motherhood is difficult. So the parents have to change their own lifestyles in order that the children will learn from example, which means things that a guy was able to do when he was single. He didn't have any students. Nobody was watching him, so he lived carefree. But now, once already, you know, you have children, then you're talmidim. Everybody is a rabbi to their children. And therefore he has to now buckle down. So the rabbi said, we have a saying in Hebrew from the Gemara and Megillah. The Gemara says, Mishenichnas Av Mema'atim B'Simcha, which means when the month of Av enters, so you have to minimize your happiness. So he said, Mishenichnas Av, when a person enters fatherhood, Mema'atim B'Simcha, finish, the party's over. You can't enjoy yourself like you're doing. Now already you have to become more serious. And that's why the Torah goes out of its way to tell us the greatness of this lady Yocheved. She merited great children because she was responsible for bringing great children into the world. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen. 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 Amen.